I'm in this unique position now where I stopped seeing one district's problems and started seeing patterns across hundreds. And now 27 years in, that pattern is unlike anything I've ever seen.
Hopefully these are the ways that districts and schools are really taking just listening, which most schools do a great job of. They're not yet capturing and applying and now using the tools that are more or less free at their disposal, already built into the tools that they have that are data privacy safe and ethical.
We could easily say, well, AI could come in and take on the job of teachers, but to the point of their mental wellness and that connection and relationship building, that's something AI can't do for us.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to today's Amped to 11 episode. We are so excited to be joined today by Amy Dujan, the Vice President of Education Brands for the ARC Network. Amy, thank you so much for joining us today on the Amped to 11 podcast.
Oh, Brett, thank you so much for the invitation. It's my honor to be here with you today.
Yeah, we are down my much better half on this podcast, Rebecca Boltzma. So we are going to both do our best to bring that energy that she is known for and all that excellence and insight that she is renowned for. But I think we can do this. What do you say?
I am up for the task. I'll tell you that. Like, I feel like we've got enough energy here.
All right. And I'm going to fake it till I make it. So with that being said, Amy, you know, you have a long, illustrious career, shocking at such a young age. If you could tell all of our listeners your journey, your why, your purpose, how did you literally wind up right now today on the Amped to 11 podcast? Walk us through your journey.
Well, I won't bore you with too much, but I started where it all starts, right, in the classroom. So I was a teacher first, and that matters because everything that I've done since then has been filtered through that lens, right? What does this actually feel like for the person in the room with kids every day? And so from teaching, I moved into school leadership and district leadership, where I was an assistant principal, a principal, and also worked with what we call our transformation schools, which sounds impressive until you really understand what it means, because those are the buildings who have the hardest problems, right? They were under-resourced, under-supported, and more importantly, they were under a lot of scrutiny. And so that work really changed me as I did that in my career. And then also under district leadership, worked as an instructional team leader, leadership, the head of leadership development, and did all of that inside one of the largest school districts in the country. And so I sat in a lot of rooms where hard decisions were made. And so I understood the weight of that scale, but it was when I left the district but I didn't leave the work. And that's where I really started to see the impact, right? And so I got to write a book about my journey in instructional leadership called The Gritty Truth of School Transformation. And that was my way of putting on paper what nobody says out loud about what it actually takes to really lead change at the instructional level. And the book became like the bridge to what I do now, which is building infrastructure that supports people running systems. So through DA District Administration, the DA Leadership Institute, and FETC, that's where the shift has taken me. And so those are some of the brands that I get to oversee. And I couldn't have gotten there any other way. Like, it's really neat to kind of see that progression of how I got here. And so I'm in this unique position now where I stopped seeing one district's problems and started seeing patterns across hundreds. And now 27 years in, that pattern is unlike anything I've ever seen. And so the leaders that I get to work with now are holding more at once than any generation of superintendents before them. And my job, our job, right, is to make sure that they don't have to hold it alone.
Amazing. Well said. And I completely empathize and align with you on this idea of, like, you have to go through what you went through to get where you are now to be able to support and empower the people that you're fortunate enough to get to. And so, like, many of the people we've had on this podcast, it sounds like you as well, and some of the amazing people like at FETC and district administration, like, you now have a different lever. You're not directly impacting it, but because you get to help so many people, you can help each of them be more impactful with the levers they have. So just thank you for leading that work. And for our listeners, before we dive into some of those big picture topics that superintendents are holding right now, maybe just let's decode some of those acronyms. So there's FETC, there's DA, there's the ARC Network. Let our listeners know how you're doing all this work through these different organizations, please.
Great question. So the ARC Network is our parent company. And so it's a global conglomeration of events and media across many sectors. And so our education sector is the one in which I sit. And underneath that, we have multiple brands. So district administration, most people know that as our editorial sites and our news brands. But we also do the same thing for our university and higher ed folks called University Business. And so those are our flagship editorial, you know, newsworthy platforms. And underneath those then become our events and professional development. So the District Administration Leadership Institute, called DALI, is really a membership organization for superintendents and school district, you know, executive cabinet level leaders, where we convene them in, you know, smaller, more intimate spaces so they can have really complex conversations in safe spaces. And then we have FETC, the Future of Education Technology Conference, which is our huge flagship anchor event where we bring thousands of educators and leaders across multiple personas together once a year. And we really celebrate everything from the how and the what, right, of education tech, of education. So what are the newest, latest, greatest innovations that are happening in ed tech? What are the best, you know, and brightest opportunities that you have to bring back to your district? And then learning from districts and leaders how they're implementing and driving change and getting results by using those tools inside their classrooms and their districts. And so it's just an amazing event. If you have never been, you should be there. It's always in January in Florida. We're excited to kick off 2027, where we're actually going to be inviting some of our university tech leaders to be joining us live in Orlando again. So it's gonna be fun.
Oh, that's amazing. So yeah, I will say, you know, we were fortunate enough to get to meet in person this year at FETC for the first time, or reconnect. And I agree with you. One, because it's like, you know, you're coming out of the holiday season. And so like conferences slow down a little bit, which is great. It's such an amazing way to kick off the year, to reconnect with everyone and to like hear what's top of mind for folks. And I will say this year, FETC really was like, on top of other great conferences this year, it was really good to see like a big shift in thinking. Some of the challenges and like what's the kind of right order of operations or a preferred way to solve these problems. And maybe we've been getting a little bit backwards lately. And that's where I'd love for you to kind of, you know, take the lead here for a moment. So as you mentioned to start today, superintendents are really in a different place than they've ever been. I'd love if you could maybe talk about what are the big buckets or big through lines that you're seeing that they are dealing with that they haven't before. Maybe let's kick off there.
I mean, that is such a loaded question. There's a question under that question, right? So in terms of right now, the uniqueness around the superintendency is that instead of dealing with, and I'm just going to use the word crises as in terms of like just big bucket issues that are happening, instead of having to deal with them kind of sequentially, right now is like there's multiple things kind of coalescing all at once, right? So you've got the mental health crisis that's happening, you know, in with our youth, and that is directly related to the recruitment and retention crisis that's happening with our teachers, right? And that burnout. But it's also directly related to student high absenteeism, right? And driving students like leaving our schools or seeking alternative paths. And so they're all just so intertwined that it's hard to kind of separate them out and say, okay, I'm going to compartmentalize this crisis and deal with it over here. So we've got teacher shortages, we've got chronic absenteeism, we've got really large academic gaps that are developed and haven't fully closed since the COVID pandemic. And in the mix of all of that now, we're really amped up, right? The adoption or the lack of adoption for AI, screen times, the debate on screen times that was just before Congress even this week. All of that, plus the community input and kind of like the loud polarization that's happening outside, it is a real perfect storm for superintendents. It's a heavyweight that they're carrying. And so they're not lacking for challenges to solve, right? They're just trying to figure out, you know, how do I approach it from a more systematic approach and be able to tackle more than one challenge at a time.
Yes. And so again, for everyone out there, for our future superintendents, it's an interesting time to navigate, but you know, it is fortunate that you have people like Amy who are, you know, working with all these leaders and trying to find these patterns. So Amy, I'm just going to choose one of them, right? A lot of what we talk about on this podcast is AI and how it can solve for some of these challenges. So AI, get on the ground floor for our listeners. What are superintendents actually doing? What does it mean when they say they're tackling AI or they're investing in AI or working with AI? What's working? Where are they stuck? And like, what are some of the secrets you're starting to, or threads you're starting to pull on and unravel?
It's great. So we've really been running a series of, you know, just kind of virtual roundtables and in-person roundtables with our superintendent community. And I'll tell you, they're not lacking for ideas about what AI could do and how it could support, right? What they're lacking in is time, policy cover, staff bandwidth to be able to like fully implement. And we actually have pockets of excellence where we see districts and superintendents who have really just embraced and they're creating their own policy and they're driving, you know, their own sort of frameworks and implementation guides. But they're doing this. Most superintendents are navigating the whole AI adoption with no budget line, no policy frameworks, teachers who are either terrified of it. And to be honest, what they won't say out loud, and I won't say names, but like superintendents who they themselves are a little scared of AI and what that means if they go too fast, if they go too slow, right? But then on the other side of that, you know, if you've got teachers who are scared of it, but you also have teachers who are using it and they don't even know it, right? They're already implementing it and using tools. And so both things are true at the same time. It's exciting. They're embracing it, but they're also still that fear factor that exists.
You know, we just concluded a 10-district, 3-day PD series on building AI community playbooks in Montgomery County, ESC area of Ohio. And what we found was, you know, when it said like the topics that resonated most, and I'd love your vantage point, you know, we scaled them. We had 115 survey results from the 72 of them across all the days. Building district-specific tools that are trained on community values, defining clear guardrails, navigating gray areas, listening before deciding, keeping humans in the loop. We have so many more, but like, is that what you're hearing as well? That like, this is what they really need support and help with?
Yes, I would say this, like, you know, the question isn't necessarily like, the question we really need to answer, right, is what are we using AI to do? Are we using it to take some of the cognitive energy out of, you know, like the operational things so that we can push the human connections more so that teachers have more time to make those one-on-one connections with teachers? I think that's really the intersection that we're at right now, right, is how do we selectively adopt, right, and employ and deploy it where it matters most so that we can keep that human connection going.
Not to put you on the spot, but with all the work you're leading, feel free to, again, you don't have to name names, but if there is a North Star or a bright light that you would want to amplify and elevate right now, like who is either a superintendent or where is a district doing something really impactful around AI that you think others should know about as a case study or a model?
Well, there's several that I would amplify, just ones that have been really stepping up to help to lead in our discussion. So one is our superintendent of the year. I'm sure you know him. He's out of Minnesota. And he's doing some an amazing work using AI to help around like validating teacher evaluations and metrics. He's also doing some incredible work in, you know, just like AI across operationalizing. So Dr. Jeff Horton is the one I'm referring to. He's really out in front of it and really using it in a really smart ways, not only in instruction, but also in teaching and learning, like in planning and PLCs, and then also in teacher feedback and evaluation, which is really neat. They've developed their own district platform for doing that they allow other districts to go and use. And so it's worth noting there. Dr. Kelly Mae Valmer, who's out in California, they started their AI kind of playbook frameworks and guardrails and guidance. I actually just did a podcast episode on a DA podcast called A Good Lesson that myself and Dr. Quentin Shepherd just started. And we interviewed her and she's talked about like the way that they started bringing AI to the community, right? So she talks about this framework of concentric circles of communication and how they use that to roll out and also to get input from the community, from students, from teachers, from parents on AI integration and implementation. So I would definitely put them out. Instructionally, some places we're seeing great things. Dr. Barbara Mullen, who's in New York, is doing some really incredible things in instructional coherence and alignment around using AI for that. So I could keep naming names. There's so many bright spots that are happening. That's what I love is that nobody has to start from scratch, right? If a superintendent sitting there saying, I feel stuck, I don't know what to do. That's the beauty of the community we're creating is we can connect them with folks who have already already gone in front of them, right? And so they don't, they can learn from their mistakes. They can, you know, kind of skip some of that pain and jump into the lessons learned and adopt frameworks that they have already created for them and customize them for the context of their districts.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you're mentioning, you know, there's different entry points, right? You can, you're trying to solve for different challenges, and AI, you know, is a broad term. And I'm sure a starting point you're finding with districts is, first, let's talk about what is the biggest challenge? What are the menial but meaningful tasks that you're trying to automate or alleviate? And it can be instruction could obviously be your biggest challenge right now. It could be operational. So there's no right or wrong place to start. It's first identifying where you have probably the biggest gaps and then partnering with your organization or finding these North Star leaders in their districts to begin the process. And that's probably the most important thing. So thank you for sharing all those amazing education leaders and what they're doing right now in this space.
It's interesting too. And just real quick, I'll throw this one in here too. So I live in Florida. So two different districts that like sandwich where I live using AI for two totally different means. Like the Broward County Schools has done a phenomenal job using it really around operational efficiency and looking at how they can cut expenses. Like you're using it to measure ROI of platform adoption and things that they have purchased. So really from a procurement, from a budget standpoint, they have saved millions of dollars by operationalizing AI over, you know, their budgeting process. And then you've got St. Lucie County Schools, so to the north of me, who has really used it to predict school grades down to like within 1 or 2 points, like not only school grades, but individual student outcomes. They're able to overlay that. So two different approaches to your point, but both seeing great success by turning what was time consuming, you know, internal resource over to AI to do that heavy lift.
Yeah. And it's that middle part of the AI sandwich. What you're saying is like how much data you never would just have the bandwidth to get to and then make really informed choices. It's able to analyze all that data and then give you optionality and say, okay, of these options now as the human, what do you want to prioritize? And let's make, you know, key decisions. That's a great use in both scenarios, and they both complement each other, right? The more budget you free up, the more you can pour into your students, the more you know about where students need support, the more you can pour into the right initiatives and tools. So that's amazing. Something we hear a lot that I'd love to get your insights on is like, you know, we're going to talk about the things you've mentioned, screen time, cell phones, you know, social media, post-COVID learning loss. There's this like idea that they're good or bad. And so I'd love to hear from you, what are strategies you're hearing that seem like they're grounded again in like community values that are really trying to frame like, what is the goal of using screens? What's the overall goal of school in this day and age? Who is starting to really have the right conversations? And anything you want to frame for our listeners about what you're hearing that's kind of shaping this discourse?
Great question. And if you'll indulge me, I would love to kind of jump off of a post that you just put on LinkedIn where you said you felt like we were having a footloose moment right now, right? And so the theater teacher in me like loved that analogy because I've been trying to wrap my head around, you know, what is it that we're trying to contain? What is it that we're really trying to solve for, right? We look at the data and it's easy, you know, when you look at the testimony that was presented in front of Congress this week, right, where they say, you know, with the billions of dollars that we've spent on ed tech, we're not seeing a return on student outcomes, right? We're actually seeing a decline. Like the gap is not closing. It's getting wider. Or we look at, you know, we look at a book like The Anxious Generation, which, you know, goes so deep into the research around, you know, just students and cell phones and social media and the impacts of that and how that has a direct correlation to the mental health crisis that we're experiencing right now. And it's real. The simple answer seems to be, well, let's ban screen, like let's reduce screen time. Let's ban phones that will increase engagement, right? And so what I loved about your comparison is because Footloose really wasn't about dancing, right? That's not really what it was about. It was about a town that was grieving, scared, and trying to control the one thing that they thought they could actually see. And the dancing wasn't the danger. The danger was everything that they didn't know how to talk about. right? Which is really where we're sitting right now. The dangers and the things that we're trying to address are the things we just don't know how to talk about them, right? We don't know what is the right amount of time. What is the right ratio? How long should kids be in front of it? And so I think banning without replacement becomes a problem, right? So the part that we don't quote is like, when we think about that movie, and I really thought about, because you got my brain moving today, Brett, you have no idea. Like I was in it, I went down the rabbit hole with you, was that when they finally lifted the ban on dancing, right? They don't open the doors and just say like, good luck, here, go dance, right? They hold a prom. They created a container. They created guardrails and they created permissions in which a place for them to do it. They gave the kids a place to bring that energy. And so if we ban a device without replacing it, or, you know, we say you can't have phones, that isn't leadership. It's an empty gymnasium, right? We have to give them the container. We have to give them the guardrails. We have to show them how to use them in a school setting. What is appropriate, what's not, right? And it is scary. Like we need to have those conversations. So, and I don't know if that's answering your question or not, but I think that the thing that is really, it really got me thinking about this moment we're in, right? But like the conversation keep getting, I think we just keep going the wrong way with the conversation. It's collapsing two completely different things like into one verdict. Like we're saying no cell phones, less screen time, go back to this analog way of doing it. But it's not the reality of the way that we operate. We can't talk about being college and career ready in one breath and then turn around and say kids can't be on screens and they can't have cell phones, because that's the way that we do work now. Do you know what I mean? It's about creating the container that teaches them how to do it. It's different than, you know, saying 13-year-olds should spend 6 hours a day on Instagram versus, hey, you know, that's not the same thing as saying, well, we're going to limit the amount of time that you're on, you know, ed tech tools in the classroom. So we can't make smart policy and make smart decisions without first like talking about the conversation of the things that we're afraid of. Like what is it that we're really solving for is kind of my take.
Absolutely. And I think something you just said that's like, I personally have found, right, going back to some of these case studies, we've been working with districts across the country. And I'd say the thing that has been the biggest aha moment they've expressed is like how AI can be what ultimately allows you to be more connected. So when we do like listening sessions, right, no one is typing notes, no one is staring at a screen, talking into a device that then captures all the wisdom in the room and then immediately can analyze and share it with you. And, you know, again, depending on where your community is and their either embrace or fear of AI, you can, you know, have no PII in there. You can scrub it before you run it through an AI tool. But essentially, you're just using a voice recorder, which everyone has for free on their phones and their computers and their iPads. But to your point, like the key is, and I'm going to channel Rebecca here, who is unfortunately not with us, but she has really been an advocate for this idea of like, we need to get out of this binary decision-making platform. And if you listen to your community, even those that seem like they are most pro or anti whatever, it's actually very easy to give them scenarios like what you've been talking about and then say, just talk about this specific scenario. Don't bring anything else into it, but like, how would you want us to solve this exact scenario? And that will help you tease out a lot of the actual values in your community. Then you could turn it around and show them, okay, based on this conversation, this seems to be where the preponderance of us want to be. Let's acknowledge these outlying thoughts because those are valid too. But say, based on the amount of discourse we've had, here's why we're moving forward this way. And that really leaves everyone as part of the community and the communication. But to your point, you can map that against key statistics, data, and findings, but ultimately it has to live with your community being like, yeah, this is our values and we're heard and we want to move forward this way, not ban for the sake of banning, not embrace everything, because we know neither of those are the right moves. And I don't think anyone in education who's trying to do this seriously believes either of those polar opposites. The hard part is, how do you just embrace discourse and moving forward together, which is a bigger unlock than like footloose and dancing. It's how do you actually communicate clearly and show people you value their opinions? And it doesn't have to be about your opinion. It has to be about what is the best opinion for the community.
Right. And we're not going to agree on everything, right? So coming to, you know, consensus and to a degree of what's allowable.
That's the dream. And that sounds like what a lot of the work you're leading, and you've highlighted people that are trying to do that. Let's keep going down the fun list of things that are keeping superintendents up at night. They're most crucial that you already named at our opening, but you know, again, please let us know the stakes of the teacher shortage, chronic absenteeism, and then, you know, how are those connected to AI? And again, who's doing great work out there to try to address either of those scenarios that we're facing?
Yeah, I will say that across the districts that we work with, right, we're seeing leaders that aren't treating these things as separate, right? Chronic, they see the correlation between the teacher shortage and chronic absenteeism. And honestly, both are kind of funneling down to this idea of like burnout and social emotional well-being, right? So whether you want to call it wellness or just, you know, mental health, like both kind of root in that, like the teacher burnout is real, which is leading to a crisis around that. And it, we have to really acknowledge that, because we could easily say, well, AI could come in and take on the job of teachers, but to the point of their mental wellness and that connection and relationship building, like that's something AI can't do for us, right? So we if we don't address teacher burnout and workload, then any AI adoption that we want to do anyways is going to fail. So we can't ask an exhausted, under-resourced teacher to also become an AI integrationist, right? It just matters, right? So part of that teacher shortage is really leaning into what are the supports and the mechanisms that teachers need to feel like they have autonomy in their classrooms, that they have the tools and resources that they need, that they feel proficient in them, and that they have a command of the content, right? That's a very interesting piece in it. And that they're getting the feedback that they need to grow in their profession is really important as well. I don't know that we'll solve for the teacher shortage. And it's not just in our industry, right, that we're seeing shortages in the workforce. And so there's that fear that AI will step in and do that. And so what we need to do is really focus on how are we training, supporting through professional development and coaching teachers to adopt AI tools to free them up, as we talked earlier in the podcast about doing, to have that human connection, the real pedagogy that comes around teaching and learning that AI is not going to do, right? Like AI can do a lot, but at the end of the day, right, it's all digital. It's a bot. It's artificial. It's not a real connection. And so we have to have real people on the ground doing that. The absenteeism piece is, I really think in the pandemic, maybe a controversial view, but I've said it in our spaces that, you know, the safe spaces that we hold at DA is that, you know, I think we kids and parents kind of saw like, wait, this is all a facade. Like we don't have to be in a school building every single day to learn. Like I can learn anywhere. I can do this virtually. I can still get an education and do it on my terms in the way that I want it. And so the best districts are embracing that and providing, you know, virtual options. They're looking across every learner and saying, we've got to have an outlet for them to be in the best environment possible for them. And so we see that in a lot of districts and many of the ones that I've already named. But when we think about places that are doing it really well, you are kind of putting me on the spot. I want to call out the right names. There's so many great leaders out there. And I'm thinking about our districts of distinction winners from this last year that did such an incredible job. Most of them were addressing that. I think at Dr. Cry, Michelle Carney Ray, she is phenomenal at looking at really supporting both teacher and student, right? Social, emotionally, really focusing on mental health and wellness and that approach, which is then leading to great academic gains, reduced absenteeism, higher retention rate of teachers. She's really a star when it comes to that. She's phenomenal. And just a beacon of how to create a blueprint to do that. There's many others that are out there doing that, but it's chronic absenteeism is a problem that is solvable, right? It all comes down to belonging. Most of the times kids don't want to be at school because they feel like they don't belong there, right? Or it's, you know, it's not relevant to them. And so the comeback strategy can't just be enforcement, like you've got to be here and sending out a million letters of you didn't show up to school today, right? It has to be about re-enrollment. It has to be, you know, about re-engaging and bringing them back into the community. And so I really feel what I've learned, especially at our December summit, I look at Dr. Frank Rodriguez out of Beaufort County. He's doing some beautiful things there. And Jay out of in Texas, they both focusing on like culture and the systems around the culture that and community communications, engaging all stakeholders. We see lots of superintendents now in putting into place student advisory boards, right? Like, so it's a school board, but it's full of students and it's outside of the governing school board, but it's to bring that student voice in what is going to be meaningful to them in that experience. And so the districts that are doing things like that are really starting to move the needle in both chronic absenteeism and in staff retention.
Yeah. And something that, again, if it exists, great. But like if there's like an exemplar of the following, what we're seeing a lot is it's similar to any adoption curve, but AI, you know, as we know, can really exasperate gaps. We're seeing some teachers who can really lean into it, who have found a better quality of life and are just overall better teachers in their own estimation, as well as their leadership team, because they're able to spend more time on what truly matters in education and pedagogy. But we really haven't seen it systemically implemented at any district, like with full fidelity. So would love to know if you're seeing people who have been able to do that, which is great. And if not, obviously, like we're all in this together and we're going to keep figuring out how to do that. Because I think once people find that roadmap and can take the exact, you know, what actually worked, that's, I think, going to be one of the biggest unlocks. It's not going to be of one colleague who's thriving or one teacher, which is what happens, unfortunately, with many initiatives. It's how do you do this at scale? So just curious if there's someone out there. If not, again, we're all in this together and we're going to figure that out. But just wanted to get a pulse check from you.
Well, I would say, Brett, if you're asking me if there's a system out there where every teacher and every leader in the building or in the district has embraced it, I would say no. I'd say that we have several of the districts that I've even mentioned that are on that trajectory, right? Like they are still in the midst of true change process where their early adopters have come on. Now they've got their first followers and they're, you know, that kind of that trajectory of moving along is happening. And so you see widespread. And I do think that there's pockets where it's like, well, we've got implementation of one platform across the board, right? But there's none that have it 100% of scale. If there was a superintendent that comes in, 100% of all my people are doing this right now, I'd probably give them my look like, with fidelity, not sure. But many of those folks that I have mentioned already in this podcast, they are probably the outliers in that they are really ahead of most in their implementation and adoption to getting to 100%.
Amazing. And not only obviously quantitative matters, but qualitative too. I think if there's districts who are starting to get better, again, like we said, quality of life responses, like teachers feel more seen, respected, they are given more tools and training that align to what they're actually dealing with on a daily basis. It's causing them or allowing them more time to know their students and families better. When we start getting data like that, that's qualitative, I think that in itself will help solve or alleviate the teacher shortage or at least the retention issue. And then once that data starts getting out there, that can help with recruitment. So yeah, as we hear those stories, please share them with us at the Amplify and Elevate organization and the AMP211 podcast, because that's the kind of stories that need to be told as people start to get towards that 100% fluency and adoption level.
Well, and the key there too, Brett, is that the reason why we have the burnout, the fatigue, and the shortage is it's initiative overload, right? And so where leaders go wrong is when they don't strategically step back and say, what are we going to selectively abandon if this is what we value and what's most important to us? Because we can't do all the things. We can't do all the things. And so we've got to prioritize and we've got to let some things go so that we can prioritize what we know is going to have the biggest impact. And so where we see we have a stronger hold in many districts are where those leaders have had the courage to let go of things that are the way that district has done it or things that, you know, they've held really important to selectively say, no, this is the direction that we're going and really setting that clear direction and path.
Something else you mentioned about chronic absenteeism. And again, just want to share a narrative that we're seeing. Like we've been partnering with schools specific on how can you use AI to address chronic absenteeism. So a motto that we just finished last week at a school here in Queens, it's the largest middle school in Queens. We did a focus group with their chronically absent students. And then we did a focus group with some of their students who have higher attendance. And we tried to tease out like what's happening behind the scenes that teachers wouldn't know. And then we actually were able to share with the staff through the principal. We made a memo and said, here's what your students are saying. And most of it is like overwhelmingly positive about what they like about school. And one of my least favorite terms, I'm going to say it here to model, not that this school said it, is like, you know, kids these days, even us as principals, leaders, parents, we were like, this hidden load that these kids are so openly acknowledging that like, we definitely didn't have as kids. You know, one of them's taking care of an infant. One of them has parents that work all night, so they stay up late to see that their parents, and who wouldn't, right? I think of my own children, and they're exhausted the next day, but like they can't control those things, or they need help figuring out, well, how can you do both, or how can we bring your parents involved? But what we also did, which was really helpful, was we started looking at things that were in their control and used AI to map it to like the CASEL framework or the durable skills or the 21st century skills that are expected. And we said, how can you now take this and flip your advisory curriculum to make sure these standards are always addressed? Because these are the ones that you can help your students learn. They're going to help them for the rest of their life, but especially being less absent and less late to middle school. So that's one of those examples, by just listening and then using a tool AI and knowing what your values are, it can transform something that would have taken a really long time. And you probably never would have been able to tease out the exact things that are within their control or not. So hopefully these are the ways that districts and schools are really taking just listening, which they, most schools do a great job of. They're not yet capturing and applying and now using the tools that are more or less free at their disposal, already built into the tools that they have that are data privacy safe and ethical.
Right. And helping them to like create what is our next one best step, right, into solving this, like synthesize all of this for us, because that would take us hours, right? Let it do it. And then you can always push back and question it. But even that is that quicker response time so you can get to solution. That's a great. Good point.
Thank you. We have two last things that we like to do on the Amp to 11 podcast. One is we like to turn it over to you, right? You're someone who leads across the nation. You know, we do a great job trying to prepare for this conversation, but we're going to turn the reins over to you. You are the new host of the Amp to 11 podcast. What's a question that you think our listeners out there might want to hear about? And you can ask me, and then we'll open it up for discourse like we've been doing.
So I would love to know from your standpoint, Brett and Rebecca, who's not here, but we're pretending she is. And I love that. So put on your Rebecca hat, right? One of the things that we keep asking on our end, and as we're engaging with superintendents and actually even other leaders, you know, within the organization, within school districts, is what is what are you hearing in your interviews and across this coverage? Like, what do you think the next big burst is going to be around AI? Like, what is the next big kind of, right now we've got, you know, ChatGPT that are helping with lesson plans, but where do you think the real bread and butter and the next big thing in AI is going to be in the way that it, in something that shapes what's happening in classrooms every day?
Okay. I'm going to first answer as Brett, and then I'm going to try to do my best, Rebecca. Okay. So I think the first thing is, where districts are going to start to see the most ROI is start with problems, have a thought partner like yourself or a thought partner, a community of practice, and actually identify the problems in your community. And the easiest way to do that is by listening. And once you've done that, instead of first see the tools that you currently have, do they have the basic capabilities you need? Instead of buying more tools, get better at the tools you have. Many of the tools you have had just like insane upgrades and advancements around AI that if you're the leader and you're too busy, or you like find those teachers that are on the cutting edge and just interview them and be like, what tools do we currently have that you're using that are transforming your workflow, student outcomes, student engagement? Start there, because you probably have someone doing that work, and then figure out how to codify it and either give that person a role where they can teach others. We've been telling people this work we did in Ohio. We did 10 district playbooks, and we actually came to the point of, we did a swipe protocol, steal like what's working from other districts, give them flowers and recognition. And one of the things a lot of people talked about was like, oh, like we should show people how we use AI effectively. And I said, well, why don't you put hyperlinks in? Because now teachers, students, parents can be like, here's how we use AI to personalize it. Make a 2-minute video, have your best teacher make it. Now everyone in the district has a resource of like, literally, here's what we do with a safe tool to personalize learning. So take exemplars, scale them widely, teach everyone to do that one thing. And a lot of the tools that are out there, you probably already have in your disposal. Like if you're a Microsoft school or Google school, there's great other products and tools you can supplement with. But get good at what you have would be the first thing I'd say. And to another point you asked before is like, don't use AI as a monolith. First, start with these buckets. You know, you've talked about operations, you've talked about instruction, you've talked about pedagogy, you've talked about communication. Literally create buckets for each. What are you trying to solve in each of those categories? And then what are the transferable skills that once you teach someone one of those, you can do it across others? And then something I didn't mention, but now I'm going to pass it to Rebecca. The biggest thing that matters is what you're doing ethical and safe. So for your current community, if you don't have best practices and policies and you don't have people who truly understand the tools you have and how to keep your students safe, how to keep their intellectual property and data safe, and making sure teachers and families and district leaders know the tools that you're approving, get them to be something that people want to use, because otherwise they're still going to acknowledgeably use AI tools. They just might not be ethical and safe. So you need to do your work. And then step one is making sure you feel good about those tools, putting in their hands. But the next step that's so crucial and equally as important is make them feel like those are powerful tools so they don't keep seeking out other ones. And if they say it doesn't do X, Y, or Z, and it turns out that's true, then go find those tools if that's what is needed to move, you know, change in your district. So that's the end of that. And that was, hopefully I did Rebecca justice on that one.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. What about your thoughts on that exact same question? Where are you seeing the biggest burst that you think our listeners should know about?
Yeah, I got to concur with you, because the conversations we're having are really around, like, you know, it's, again, not about doing it all at once. It's about finding, like, where is it going to have the biggest impact? But I do think we're going to see down the road, we're going to be AI has the potential to, we talk about differentiated instruction. We talk about, you know, learner modalities and helping kids learn, you know, in the way they want, talking about relevant text and, you know, grade level appropriate text. With AI, I'm going to be really on the edge of my seat. Instruction junkie, that's my jam. But if I'm really interested to see areas where districts who really embrace that and say, how do we help kids train their, you know, agents to teach them the way they want to be taught, around the content that they want to be taught, how they want it to be taught, and if we start to really see some changes in academic outcomes because of that.
I think that what you said is definitely the most important aspect of what we're doing and why we're doing it, right? We always say, like, and this goes for anyone in a community, teach people how to use AI the way their brain works, because that you and I can have the exact same challenge. Let's say we're both struggling to differentiate instruction for our students, but like how we use an AI tool to help us do that could be completely different, but still get us to an excellent endpoint. And students are the exact same way. If they're both struggling with math, two students at the same grade level could have a totally different way to use the same AI. So I do agree with you. Like that is ultimately, if we solve nothing else in education, truly authenticating personalized learning would just be the best use case of it. And I do think like we have the tools now to do it. It's how do you now train and empower the teachers to learn how to do it and then make sure the students feel equally as equipped. So that's probably, you're right, the most edge of your seat, exciting thing that's happening in education today. Thanks for ending us on that. The last piece of advice we're going to ask you to share with our listeners is, they're listening to this. They are fired up. They are ready to go. They know there's great people doing great things. They can make one move the next day to, you know, be better prepared. What is it? What are the things you hope leaders are going to start doing that would have the greatest impact? Where can they go? Where can they look for help? Lay out the roadmap, please.
Well, honestly, it's all about connection and community, right? So for me, the best advice I can give them is to get proximate, right? Get in proximity to people in your system, even if it's one person who has been isolated or somebody who is doing the work really well, right? Get in proximity of those people. And I'm not talking about just an email or a survey, but having those real conversations to the points that you made, Brett, right? With teachers, with a teacher who's about to leave, or a student who hasn't been in a building for 3 weeks, or a teacher who is like killing it and is doing amazing things with AI and innovation in their classroom, or a building leader who's really embraced you know, the implementation of AI, and they're seeing things really start to take hold. So my advice, the best one step really is to get connected and get proximate to your people, but also for superintendents or for other leaders out there, it's to also have that connection and to get in proximity of like-minded people who are trying to solve the same problems that you are, right? To get into trusted environments and conversations with them, which is what we aim to build at DA and the DA Leadership Institute and at FETC. And so, you know, we invite you to come into those spaces with us, because that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to help leaders lead differently, to lead better, to feel like stronger and more confident, and to lead with clarity. So do that. Everything that we've talked about today, AI integrations, green policy, getting kids back into buildings, saving teachers, right? It all runs on the trust, as on trust, right? As the main operating system. And so trust is really built one conversation and one interaction at a time.
Yep. And for all the talk we keep having about AI, innovation, education, I mean, you said it, it's really relationships. Who do you trust when you want to vet something? You could ask AI to vet it, but really you're going to ask someone who's been in the same situation as you, who's found success. That's who ultimately is going to validate how you move forward and why and when. So Amy, the last thing we ask folks is, if there's anyone else you want to make sure you give some flowers to at this point, or you want to talk good about behind their back, this is your opportunity. You know, I know you have some great colleagues in the space, like, you know, one of our former podcast guests, Jen Womble.
I was just going to say Jen Womble. Thank you.
I wanted to make sure I knew it too. I just wanted to fit out there first. But yeah, so Jen and other people that are almost as equally as amazing as Jen, feel free. The floor is yours.
I mean, there's so many people I can name. You know, I have to give flowers to like that my colleagues and my team, right? So Jen is our conference producer, you know, content producer for FETC, and just the way that she intentionally stays really close to what's happening in the field, not just in the world of ed tech, but also just with leaders and connecting and making sure that she's staying tight to what we're doing in the DA Leadership Institute. And so, you know, we have a lot of trusted colleagues like, you know, Marlon Stiles, and really loving Dr. Quentin Shepherd. He's always such a great anchor for us here at DA, and one of our frequent, he contributes a column in DA every month for our superintendents. But everywhere you go in this space, like some people say, like ed tech is a big, small community, right? Like the education community, there's always someone that's like 6 degrees to somebody else that is within the organization. And so, you know, I'm fortunate and incredibly blessed that in my career, I have been able to work alongside and for some really incredible leaders. And so, but right now is my favorite, because I get to work with incredible people like Jen and Jody Buning, who's been helping us a lot. I can name everybody on my team, and that would probably, my editorial staff that is working on DA, like Mike Award and Alcino and Matt Zelaznik, like they really are doing everything they can to make sure that they're bringing that journalistic lens to it as well. So we've got a new community lead. Anyways, there's a lot I could do. I don't want to just keep throwing names out there, but every leader that is a part of our DA community, I learn from every day. And so I'm thankful for, like, I could have a new list of all the names, just like give them all flowers. But most importantly, I just want to acknowledge this again to the superintendents that are out there. The weight and the amount that, like, the uniqueness of the time that you're leading in right now matters, right? And the fact that they are able to do that. So if I could name every superintendent, I would do that right now and just say that knowing where they are in their journey, you're doing great, and just keep going. Just keep pushing.
Well, thank you again for all the wealth of knowledge you bring, all the people you support, your numerous roles you play in education and ed tech. And for all of our listeners out there, please, you know, find Amy Dujon, look for district administration. Hope you can make it to FETC next year. You will not be disappointed. The great Jen Womble, as we mentioned, will be leading that. And just want to thank you again, Amy. Is there any other things they should know about where they can find you or other ways they can engage with you and your community?
Absolutely. So again, obviously FETC, but if you're a superintendent out there, we want you to be a part of our DA Leadership Institute and join us at our superintendent summits. If you're a woman leading in education, we want you to come to the Leadership Network for Women Summit that happens in September. It's a really unique space. And so we invite you to do all that. But you can find me on LinkedIn. You can also find me, I'm sure we'll drop all my contact information in here, but I would love to hear from you, connect with you. Always looking for phenomenal leaders to spotlight. to speak at our events and to share the work that they're doing. So Brent, really thank you for the opportunity to be here and to talk about the meaningful work that's happening.
Yeah. So thank you again, Amy. Thanks to all of our AMP211 listeners for joining us today. And as always, go out there and make every day like today a jumbo cannoli day. Live your best life.